last night, it wasn't the devil with the look in the man with the look in his eyes. It was a man with chili in his eyes because I ate some of Carl Bianco's Uber Thai, and then I touched my eye, and then people got me pouring milk in it, and that was just a disaster. And I eventually had to leave and go and get a professional eye wash. So, man with the chili in his eye. And tonight, it's the man that should have the glint in his eye of another World Cup campaign, but we'll just have to wait a little longer. That's my theory. That'll be part of the World of Football discussion with Dave Davutovic in the studio. Our special guest is the PFA's Karen Gillan, of course, Kate Gill. She was maybe one of Australia's two first female football stars. Must be delighted with how the Matildas are tracking, and also a new collective bargaining agreement that placed women footballers in the W League ahead of their AFLW counterparts. And that was done without much fanfare. So we'll just talk about that. We've got Melbourne City signing Marcello Carusca and the SPT quiz from our great sponsors. After nine, no Zanners or Milne for initially speaking, but the show goes on. The initials MJ with Jeffrey Poulter and former AFL and NFL player Chris Bryan. There's a quiz in the offing, if time permits, and then Licorice All Sports. But right now, the round ball, you know what? It doesn't bounce funny like the egg-shaped Australian rules football, but on Tuesday night, it behaved funny. So it's the world of football, that naughty, naughty football.
On 11:16 SEN, the world of football.
Now sometimes I hit the post and go in. Sometimes I hit two posts and go in. Sometimes I hit two posts and a goalkeeper and go in. But on a Tuesday night against the Tigers, one just had a feeling that that ball wasn't going in. Luckily, it went in twice, and Australia's campaign now takes a different route. As Dave Davutovic from the Herald Sun joins us with plenty of big football stories brewing. How are you, Dave?
Going well, Finey. Just looking over my notes from last week, and about now, Timmy Cahill had that shot that hit the left post and crawled across the face of goals and pretty almost struck the other post and just missed. And when I saw that, I just thought, gee, it's not going to be their night. And unfortunately, it took them a long time to get that first one, and that's what ultimately killed them.
Thank goodness they did kick their second, even though it didn't make a finish in the difference in the end. But it would have made a difference to an already under siege and Postecoglou. If they couldn't have got a win against Thailand in this qualification, would that have been enough to tip him out?
I don't think so. FFA have sort of stood behind him. I mean, it was the players' union that actually issued a release the morning after the game, urging the Australian public to back Ange Postecoglou and the Socceroos. We heard, I guess, a little bit from David Gallop and the FFA via an article and a press conference a couple of days later, but I don't think they would have pulled the trigger, but it certainly would have heaped a lot more pressure on Ange Postecoglou. Mark Bosnich and particularly Robbie Slater of Fox Sports are quite vocal. Slater actually going a step further than Bozza and calling for Ange's head. I wrote a pretty strong comment piece backing Ange and saying, you know, he deserves to see this through. He won the Asian Cup, and you know, he's coach of an Australian soccer team who are in the midst of a really tough qualification phase. And as I've said many a times, Finey, our players aren't playing at the level that they were yesteryear.
I'm going to give you an Australian rules saying that is famous and comes from the great Alan Jeans. And I do have concerns sometimes when football commentators, ex-players of the world game, begin to over-intellectualise the sport. Now, we know that Australia's formation has changed, and that can be blamed for some things and credited for other things. But I am telling you, as Alan Jean says, you can fry them, you can boil them, you can curry them. They're still plain old sausages. And the Australian team does not have star power. Aaron Moy is developing into that. But, you know, if we're remembering Kuehl, Viduka and Timmy Cahill at his best, then we have to understand, as the rest of the world continue to improve at this game, that we are not blessed with star footballers at the moment, and there's no formation or manager or coach or system that's going to change that next week.
I think you're right, Finey. If Mark Viduka's up front and Harry Kewell's playing in the hole and Bresciano's feeding them, that's a very different result the other night.
Yeah.
A very, very different result.
We've got a plucky lad from Huddersfield. We've got a goalkeeper from Brighton and Hove Albion. And we've got a couple of Bundesliga players.
Hmm.
One of them's a keeper.
Well, and Langerak's gone on loan to Levante in Spain, and he wasn't in the squad on the weekend. So in the top five leagues in the world, the big five as they call them, we've got three players playing regularly. Ryan Moy, Lekker.
Two outfield players. Well, yeah. You can't do much with that when you're playing against Japan, who has got...
10 of their 14.
Correct. 10 of their 14.
Playing regularly in the big five.
And succeeding there and being the sort of footballers that I sought after because they're good footballers.
What happens in these campaigns, Finey, is that we lose context, yeah? So we start looking at games individually.
Yep.
But when you look back at the Postecoglou regime and you add that layer of Australian football where it's at, mate, we've got 9 professional clubs in this country. That is ridiculous on the global stage. 9 professional clubs, which means 80 or 90 Australian players only are playing each week. It's not enough.
You know what we need to do? We need to do what Marcelo Carrusco's done, become a naturalised Australian. We need to naturalise every man, woman and child that can be put into a pair of football boots. Now, seriously, Marcelo comes to Melbourne and the greatest football journey a person can make is to leave Adelaide and play for City or Victory. You get a win straight away because you're living in Melbourne and then, hopefully, it translates to great on-field success. Good evening and welcome to Melbourne, Marcelo.
Hi, good evening. How are you? Thank you.
It's a great signing for Melbourne City, but for you personally, at this stage of your career, is it exactly the move you wanted to make to get into the City Group? And just explain the motivation behind coming to Melbourne Town.
Yeah, of course. This stage of my career, to come to this amazing club is something I was waiting for many years. Now, when we finished last season, Pedrillo called me, and I was expecting this chance for almost 3 months. And finally, today we can say I signed, and I'm so happy for that.
Marcelo, you were only confirmed as a Melbourne City signing today, but about 2 weeks ago, your Latino teammate in Bruno Fornaroli put a post on social media saying, welcome Cello to the club. Perhaps a little bit premature. Did he get in a little bit of trouble for that?
Yeah. It was he got a little bit of trouble. Yeah, straight away, people from the office came to the change room and also deleted the photo. It was too late. But yeah,
I'm interested in your personal situation. You're a naturalised Australian now. You're heading into your mid-30s. How do you and your wife Karina plan to continue living in Australia? Is that the plan moving onwards? It seems to be, obviously, through your naturalisation, yes. but it would be great. It's great. It's a great message for a lot of South American footballers' re-lifestyle.
Yeah, of course. To be honest, when you are in Argentina, you don't know much about the Australian League, about the A-League. You don't know much about this football. From there, we can't watch any games. So we came, to be honest, we see what happened for 1 year. And after, since we arrived here, we start to love the city, the country, the lifestyle. Everything here is great. And yeah, with my wife, we decide to become an Australian citizen and live here for a better future for my kids. You know, this is the main thing that we thought about to become an Aussie.
Wow, now you can, that you live in Melbourne, you can drink the tap water.
Yeah, I was drinking the water, what you say?
Oh, yeah, but you'll see. As you become more of a Melburnian, you'll understand why we make jokes about Adelaide.
Okay,
but...
I will ask.
Marcelo, as Finey just alluded to, the lifestyle over here seems to be, in Australia, seems to be a real attraction for the South American players. Jonathan Germano, who played for Melbourne City, yeah. Melbourne Heart for a few years, has stayed here. He's playing in the local NPL. Yeah. Bruno Fornaroli, his family is really settled here. Gabriel Batistuta also lived here for a number of years over in Perth and was actually linked to the Adelaide United job recently. So just tell us about the difference in the lifestyle over here compared to South America and I guess Argentina specifically.
Yeah, it's a big question. We can talk for ages about the difference between Argentina and Australia. Argentina is a great country also, but in terms of lifestyle, of course, we prefer to stay in Australia because it's different economics. The people also live different. There are many things we can talk, but I think what we put in our balance was to have the chance for my kids to have a better future. You know, here everybody, you work hard, everybody has the opportunity to grow, to buy a house, to be successful. And in Argentina, now everything is very difficult. It's very difficult to pay the bills, very difficult to live well, to go for holidays. And here, if you work hard, you can get whatever you want.
Marcelo, will you be featuring for Melbourne City tomorrow night, FFA Cup quarterfinal game away to Sydney FC? Are you travelling to Sydney?
Yes. We are in Sydney now, so ready for the game tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously, unfortunate that Bruno Fornaroli is out injured after that, very unfortunate tackle in the last FFA Cup game. Do you see yourself playing perhaps in a more advanced role, perhaps maybe as a false nine or your more traditional attacking midfield position?
Yeah, I can play both, but yeah, we want to miss Bruno. Unfortunately, his injury, unfortunately for my game, also for my football, I will miss him inside the pitch, but we hope that he recovers soon and I come back to play and we can play together because he's a fantastic player and I would love to play with him soon, so we see what happens.
We're chatting with Marcelo Carrusco, former Adelaide star, Adelaide City, but now with Adelaide United, but now with Melbourne City. And you didn't have to wait long to find out what your Adelaide United teammates thought of you, because I think even before it was announced that Marcelo was a City player, you were in a friendly playing against them. What was it like lining up against your old teammates? And by the way, Adelaide won with a goal in the 120th minute in the last minute of the third period, whatever that is. So it was an extra long game. But what was it like playing against your old mates?
Yeah, it was very different, weird at the same time. Play against my couple of friends and ex-teammates, play with other t-shirts was very different. But yeah, I enjoyed the game. We played three times for 40 minutes. It was good. It was my first game since we finished last season. So was good to play against them also.
And Adelaide players playing for Melbourne had a good day because Stephen Mawk scored. So the returning son.
Yeah.
He's a very good footballer, Stephen. You've played with him. Just tell us a little bit about how he developed at Adelaide before moving on, but he really developed it at your club.
Yes. I always tell him that it was the best move in his career to come to Adelaide in just 6 months, and we were champion with him. He was a very important player for us, and he's a great midfielder. He ran, and he's smart, and he has goal that not many midfield player have. Now we want to play together again. Hopefully we should play with him many games and try to do the same that we did in Adelaide.
Now, Marcelo, you have a very decorated CV. You are an Argentina under-20 international, made your senior debut with Estudiantes, a famous club over there. Now, just wanted to talk about your upbringing and also in particular your period with Galatasaray, where you also featured in the UEFA Champions League, which we'll be speaking about later on because, of course, it kicks off this week. But tell us about your upbringing.
Yeah, as you say, I play for under 20s. We played the World Cup also in the 20s. We didn't do very well, but it was a great opportunity, great tournament to play. And after I was playing in Argentina for many years, my old club, Estudiantes de La Plata, I moved to Mexico, to Turkey, and after to Mexico. Come back to Argentina for a couple of years and finally arrived to Adelaide in 2012. So, yeah, I have a couple of years playing and a professional player, so enjoying the game.
And just your experience playing in the Champions League, and I believe you played against Liverpool back in 2006-07, the season when Liverpool actually made the Champions League final.
Yeah, it was great. One of the best experiences I ever have. So playing in Liverpool, in this stadium with this in front, these kind of players, it was amazing. I will never forget. Also, we play again in Galatasaray at home in Istanbul. So it's something, I will never forget.
Must ask you, Maxwell, before we let you go, when you played for Galatasaray, did you play against Besiktas?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yes, see, I'd like to say that the Melbourne Victory City rivalry is fierce, but it ain't fierce like this. It ain't fierce cinder block throwing from the stands fierce. They'd say that's one of the craziest games in world football.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
Loco.
I was thinking when they're gonna stop, when the referee gonna stop the game, and never happened. It was crazy, unbelievable. The police was almost inside the pitch, trying to avoid the bottled water that they throw from the stand. So it was a little bit crazy, but it's Turkish football is like this. The passion is unbelievable. I think it's more and worse than Argentina.
Yeah, you've experienced great football experiences. Hopefully there's more ahead. They reckon in that game between Galatasaray and Besiktas annually, or the two games, the safest places to be is where the flares are, because at least there's some light. welcome to Melbourne Town, and we know that there's great football in you, and we also know that there are great goals in Marcelo Carrasco, so hopefully you can bulge the back of the net as well as be provider and midfield architect. Good luck for the upcoming season.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Marcelo Carrasco, I almost felt that you were outdoing me then, Dave. Every time you spoke to him, you said Marcelo so perfectly, as though to, like, beat me 4-0. I couldn't get one in the back of the net.
Do you want me to call you Marco?
No, I just love the Marcelo. It was, you sort of lingered on the L's. It was... You beat me every time.
You've got to drag it out a little bit.
Yeah, unless our next guest's name is, something Adios or, a harness racing name, you'll beat me again. It's simple, though. It's Kate Gill.
Easily arranged, though, Finey.
It's Kate Gill, but the story's not simple. A great footballer now with the PFA and with the W League CBA agreement put to bed. And she must be very comfortable with how the women's game tracking. It'll be a great chat after the break. Welcome back. Well, the world of football in Australia has two very different stories at the moment. I hope they're not heading in different directions, because the women's game, the Matildas' direction, is clear, defined, exciting, and on the up and up. And we find out how the men, what direction they're heading in their next four games. Nerve-wracking stuff. Kate Gill is really one of the first stars of the Matildas and the national game for women in this country, and will always be known as one of the great Matildas of all time. 41 goals in only 80-odd games, 86 games maybe, but it's a sort of strike rate that earns some blokes half a billion euros. Then to be part of the PFA executive that has kicked real goals for when the women's game marks Kate Gill as important off pitch as on pitch, and we are delighted to have the PFA executive with us tonight. Good evening, Kate.
Hey, boys, how are you?
Very well, and I get a sense that, like your playing career, which was brilliant but not trumpeted, not at a time when women's football was nowhere nearly strong enough promoted, and your heroics were really known by football aficionados, especially mainly women football aficionados only. Likewise, a really good result for the W League in the CBA collective bargaining agreement, which pictures them ahead of the trumpeted AFLW, has been quiet news, if there is such a thing.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the players have been living and breathing the, I guess, not current conditions, but past conditions for over 10 years. The W League's coming up to its 10th season, and it's fantastic to see that both the PFA through the players and the clubs and the FFA have jumped on board and really backed the women's game and is giving it the deserved respect that it should have had prior to, I guess, 2017.
Is this a case of almost working from the top backwards? The W League in and of itself doesn't raise the revenue to back the model, but with the power that Matildas are and the enormous interest and saleability of the team through eyeballs on TV, live attendances and now merchandising, it'll be the top end of football that hopefully funds and builds their feeders.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, we have such an exciting national team, and the domestic talent that we have coming through needs to have a clear pathway and a profitable pathway. And that's what we're creating here with the W League. We want to keep as many players as we can in the game, and we want young girls to aspire to be a Matilda and to step their career through the W League.
Kate, when one considers that W League players a year ago had no minimum wage, a number of players were actually out of pocket, had to pay their own medical, physio expenses to play in the W League. How significant is this with the minimum wage of $10,000 now as part of the CBA?
Yeah, look, it allows the players, I guess, a mindset and a cultural change as well. They now can consider themselves professional. They can dedicate the time to football without having to worry about the off-field pressures. And I think from the mental aspect of that, it's a huge game changer. To be afforded a minimum wage and then that's essentially it, it's a minimum, so they're well within their right and capability to negotiate higher. So we needed to really look after the domestic players and essentially bring the bottom up, which is going to lift the top immensely as well.
As part of the PFA, Kate, you are not going to, and I'm sure wouldn't want to divide and conquer between the men and women's game, but there is only X number of dollars in a marketing sense, and there might come a time when the two worlds of football in terms of internationally are competing for the same dollar, and like was the case in basketball for a period, maybe not anymore, the women's team was outstripping the men's team, had the big names, Lauren Jackson and others, and got the big money there for a while. So this is a case, I'm sure, from the girls' perspective of get out there and sell us because we will not let you down.
Yeah, and the girls have been advocating that for some time. And, I mean, the Matildas have done exceptionally well given the resources they've had and training off the goodwill of those involved. And I think it's come to a headway as such, if that's the word to use, where the girls, as the Matildas, they're their own brand. They're marketable within their own rights. And the W League itself is a fantastic product, and Fox have really backed it. There's more broadcast games going to be aired this season, and I think that's a real genuine partnership to actually growing the game and appreciating how significant women's football is within the football ecosystem.
Yep, spot on, Kate. 27 games beamed live on Fox Sports this season in the W League. You touched on the Matildas. They've got a two-game series coming up against Brazil starting on Saturday in Penrith. A sold-out Pepper Stadium. I believe it'll be just over 20,000 fans, I guess underlining your point about the girls being able to market themselves. How significant is that, and what are you expecting in this two-game series?
Yeah, it is fantastic, and it's so pleasing to see. I mean, we've got such a great public following, and the fact that they're going to turn out in their droves and sell out a game is fantastic. And then considering that we could have 40,000 fans watching two games against Brazil, which the Matildas and Brazil have such great rivalry, so I think the showcase for women's football is really going to be spectacular, and I obviously back our girls to do one over them, probably twice, to be honest. I mean, we've just got exceptional talent on the park, and when you're competing against the likes of Marta Cristiani, they're world-class names. So the football product that's going to be on display is just amazing.
And you mentioned Marta, a five-time FIFA World Player of the Year. She's an absolute freak. Really looking forward to see that head-to-head battle against Sam Kerr, who herself has been nominated for the FIFA World Player of the Year award, which will be announced, I think, in a month's time. How do you see that battle unfolding? And Brazil obviously going to be really determined to overturn that shellacking a couple of months ago.
Yeah, most definitely. And I mean, I think to be fair to Brazil, they probably didn't have their best park on the best team on the park at the Tournament of Nations, but that's not discrediting the girls, the Matildas' performance at all. And as I said, that almost Goliath battle that's going to happen between Sammy Kerr and Marta. Sammy's just such an exciting talent, and the best thing about it is she just looks like she's absolutely enjoying a football. So it's just brilliant to see.
We spoke about X number of dollars being available, but there's also X number of talented sports people available, and the AFL through AFLW are proactive and competitive to the point of almost marking it as a competition within national sport. And they proudly paraded girls from all different sports, Ellie Brush from the world of football, the round ball version, Bree Davey, a star player, was a former goalkeeper. There's a battle on. It is a battleground. What is the PFA and what is football in Australia doing to shore up their numbers beyond the CBA?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic point. And to be honest, I don't see it as a battle. I see it just this great shift in momentum in embracing women's sport. It's so fantastic to see. I mean, you've got the AFLW, you've got the Big Bash League, you've got the WNBA just starting up now. So it's fantastic to see that there's so much movement and, I guess, focus and exposure on the women's game. And I think from AFL's point of view, obviously it's new, so it needs to develop its talent pool. And as football, the round ball code, we have such great participation rates at youth level, but the whole essential crux of this W League deal and having this CBA is making sure that that potential comes through, and it comes through the pathway, and it sees that you can have a viable career by playing football both domestically and internationally.
Yeah, that last word's important. It's nice to get on a plane and go and play GWS, but it ain't Europe.
No. Exactly right. And that's what football, we're a global game, and that's what we can provide. The opportunities are enormous.
You know what's great in terms of the Kate Gill story is, as really our first Matildas champion, it's wonderful that Kate's not sitting back and the occasional interview and sort of loving it, but ruefully saying, oh, but, you know, in our day, these were the problems we faced. Kate is now the solution to those issues that dogged women's football when she played, and to be the solution after that great career makes her one of Australia's most important sports people and administrators of all time.
No, thank you. I mean, that's very kind of you to say, and I kind of looked at it, and it can be quite bittersweet at times, because if I round the clock back, I'd be wishing I was 10 years younger now and what's ahead of me. Like, that's the obvious answer to it, but you're right in saying that I came through that breed. Even players before me experienced far worse than what I did. So it's all about building the game. And I think you have a responsibility to the generations that are to come, but to the game itself. I mean, we all love it. That's why we play it. And I just want to see it flourish. And I want to see those young girls follow their dreams and have the vehicle to do so.
Finey, I've got it on good authority from people inside the football industry that Kate has certainly turned heads with her the job that she's done over at the PFA over the last few years, and she's got a massive future in the game, got absolutely no doubt about it. And Kate, you were involved in some really serious meetings around a month ago, which involved obviously the Congress when FIFA were in town. How did you find those meetings, and where's this all heading?
Yeah, look, I was extremely fortunate to be involved in that process, and I'm very thankful to John Didalutza, who's my CEO, for involving me in that. And I think the biggest thing to come out of this, and with my women's football hat on, is where the female voice stands in this Congress restructure. And the PFA advocated for that strongly, as we've clearly wanting two votes, one to represent our male members and one to represent our female members. And I guess we've come up with some staunch opposition as to whether we should have that much of an influence. But I think if we're really going to give a strong voice to the female game, we really need to make sure that that voice is going to be supported and heard, and that there's the appropriate mechanisms in place to do so.
You know what, Kate, you've learnt much from John Didalutza. Don't learn anything to do with food, because he was going to be on the show tonight and he's got food poisoning or something. So.
I reckon it's someone else that might be coming down with a bit of that fighting.
Who's that?
Someone sitting in pretty close to me at the moment. How are you travelling?
Well, yeah, I've got a heartburn. The old theory, don't have a hot curry before anything other than moving to India to live, is a correct one. Kate, we just should mention, I mean, we did touch on the results that the Matildas had secured and what it's parlayed into from attendance, etc. But the reality is that come the next World Cup finals and qualifications, etc., Australia at last can win a World Cup in football. And this is a serious World Cup. This is half of where the game's headed. And it's heady times, exciting times, and as being part of it off-field, do you believe we can win a World Cup in our times? When I say that, in the next 12 years?
Oh, most definitely. And I'll back that as strongly as I can. I think the talent that we have in the current group is exceptional. It's probably the best Matildas team that we've ever produced. And those girls are more than capable of winning a World Cup. And I'm incredibly excited about the opportunity that they have in front of them. And I really genuinely strongly believe that it will happen.
Well, let's make sure us in the media, you in the executive, let's make sure that when it happens, Australians know this team, love this team, and celebrate it as hard as they would for the men. Because that all it is recognition, and then the result will be matched by the national outpouring of joy. I'm looking forward to it, and thanks for being part of the story, Kate.
No, thanks, boys. Appreciate your time.
There you go. And it is. It's important in the media that we keep promoting this team, because they are beauties. And if they do win, it'd be terrible for, you know, Australia to half be aware of it.
Yeah, what happens is every time they go to a World Cup or an Olympic Games, they get a heap of publicity. The issue is in between. And that's why this two-game series, which unfortunately both games are in New South Wales, it'd be good to take them around Australia, but it's so important. It is both games are live on Fox Sports, so it is a step forward for the women's football game, Finey.
A step forward for our fans that listen to this program of the World Game is SPT football, because as you can see, I'm wearing my West Ham top. But it's
is that the new release?
That is. It's the only in Australia. There's a bit of cachet wearing an old retro AFL jumper. In the World Game, you must buy the new shirt each year. You really can't go to games wearing old shirts. Well, this is so old that
you can't even see the labels on there.
No, the two times ago when I washed it, every single from the emblem from the West Ham crossed irons to the JobServe sponsorship, it all fell off in the wash. Just letters, J's and S's and V's.
So it says more about your washing than anything else. It's a ripper retro top, Finey. I do love it. What season's it from?
Mid-90s? Yeah, maybe around 2000. I'll check. Yeah. But it also doubles as a Burnley top when they win. So they beat Crystal Palace on the weekend, and I was walking around with, I don't know what a Burnley accent is, but I tried it.
Aston Villa too.
Oh, they can get good stuff. I don't deal with lower divisions yet. I might next year. We've got a great, great quiz, and the beauty is you don't get a shitty top like this. What's the prize?
The prize is an official UEFA Champions League match ball, Finey. Now, it kicks off in the next 24 hours, UEFA Champions League, and the winner.
Do we know what the ball is? Because there's always something.
It's an Adidas ball.
Yeah, but there's always something saucy about a ball.
We'll let the listeners know after the break. I need to do a bit of research on that.
You know, the ones that it swerves too much.
The tango.
Yeah, only for Robert Green did it ever swerve too much. The straight one swerved too much.
Well, most English keepers, for that matter.
We're going to take a break. 9-4-2-9-11-16. Win the new ball, the Adidas ball for this year's Champions League. The one that is set to propel Apoel Nicosia into football immortality.
For the Peter Jackson VFL Love the Game Final Series. Full fixtures and pre-sale tickets at vfl.com.au. And Charles Tirrett, where you can get free premium business shirts for $99, including delivery. Go to ctshirts.com.au/SEN. On 1116 SEN, the world of football.
It's the Champions League music.
Love it.
See, you love it. I think it's something Princess Wilhelmina of Holland would get undressed to. It's too regal for me.
I get goosebumps when I hear that finding.
Well, I
love
used
it.
To not get goosebumps because, of course, West Ham is not a Champions League type team. But
I almost were a couple of years ago.
I now have a Champions League team. Of course, everybody knows me as a great Quora Bag fan. A team that I found out existed yesterday.
What can you tell me about Quora Bag?
Quora Bag are from Argentina, from Azerbaijan.
I was going to say, very good of them to be playing in the UEFA Champions League.
No, they are from Azerbaijan. They wear the blues of Chelsea, I think. I'm not quite sure.
Black is their home strip, fine.
Is it black?
Yeah. Blue's their away strip. Okay. Their third strip.
Well, they've got a lot of strips. But I think they've got a bit of Azerbaijani oil money in their team.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be honest, let's be true. Azerbaijan was not putting a lot of teams through Champions League in recent years.
No.
They are, what can you say about them? They were formed in 1951. Their nickname is the Horseman, or Attila.
Attilar.
And until recent money was put into the team, they couldn't afford nets. But now they're all the go. And their boss, the coach, is, of course, Gurban Gurbanov, because Gurbanov's parents had a real flair for naming their kid. What do we call him? What do we call the third Gurbanov? I don't know, Gurban.
real heavyweight coach of the Soviet Union. He's actually got a decent playing record. Fairly young, but I'll tell you what, Finey, they're not as bad as you may think, because they've had to go through the qualifying phase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they're... I'm looking forward to them repeating the dose that they in qualifying, they beat FC Samotredia 8-0. Samotredia could, by the way, play anywhere. They could be on a rock in Gibraltar, for all I know. Let's get into the quiz. Lockie's in Yarraville, the SPT. Football experiences at 182 Blackburn Road. Whitehorse Road in Blackburn. Whitehorse Road, Blackburn. How are you, Lachlan?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good.
First question, Lachlan. Which English side came through the playoffs to secure a spot in this season's Champions League?
Liverpool.
Very good. Four questions tonight, by the way. We're making it a little bit harder. It is a popular prize. Question number two. Name two of the three nations that currently get four spots in the UEFA Champions League. Two of the three nations that currently get four spots.
Is that for including a playoff, or...?
I believe so. Yep.
Yes, okay. Yes.
England and Spain, but England have five in there. But that's because of the playoff.
That's because Manchester United won the Europa League. Very good. Lachlan is on fire. He's halfway there. Question number three. Who was the top scorer in last season's Champions League?
I'm guessing it would have been a Real Madrid player.
Clock's ticking, Lachlan.
Not Ronaldo, is it?
It was. Do you know how many?
12
goals. 12 goals. Double digits. Righty, this is the winning question, Lachlan. Finey, do you want to read it, or are you happy for me?
No, I'm enjoying your work.
All right, thank you. How many Australians in this season's Champions League? How many Australian players will feature in this season's Champions League?
I know that Tommy Orr isn't in it because Apoel didn't pick him.
Correct.
Um,
process of elimination.
Yeah. Here, this quiz will end closer to midnight if we do it this way.
Maybe zero.
Yeah, nah. Sorry, Lachlan. Gee, you almost got to the end. Yeah. It opens the door for Brendan in Glen Huntly. Brendan, you're with us.
Yeah, I'm here, guys.
How many Australians in this season do you weigh for Champions League?
Well, Celtic has Tommy Rogic.
Correct.
Isn't there a goalkeeper he plays for in Holland? Is it Feyenoord?
Well, you're getting warm. You're getting warm.
So you're thinking, I think there's maybe... if you're thinking...
No, we need an answer quickly. You'll get buzzed out.
Is there three?
Sorry, Brendan.
Damien and Cranberg, quickly. Cranbourne. In Heidelberg, in Germany. How are you, Damien?
Good, Finey. How are you going?
Give us a number quickly.
Two.
Correct.
That's it. That's the quiz.
Very good.
You've won the ball.
So Tom Rogic and Brad Jones of Feyenoord.
Hang on to the line. And by the way, Quora Bag have had some big wins. To get through to where they are now, they beat Lithuania's FK Banger. FK Banger Gargadzai 4-0 away, and that was of course one of the famous football days because the Quarabag team was coached by what was his name?
Gurban Gurbanov.
And FK Banger is coached by Thomas Karkas. Oh, you're going to love him for originality. We're off to the news.
Coming up in the next hour, we've got feature interviews with Quarabag stars.
Yeah. You know what? Don't bag Quarabag. We are some fans tomorrow.
And UEFA Champions League starting tomorrow, 3 games on Bein Sports, Finey.
Including Chelsea Quarabag. After the break, the initials are MJ.